Okay, welcome. Okay, so we're going to get started from the top of Hamad Beis. Today's Amud is Brachos Hamad Beis. And we're going to get to the top of Amud Aleph. Okay, so the part where we're going to start from, and that's where my brother-in-law left off last week, is where it starts Amr of Yochanan, and that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines down on Hamad Beis. Yeah, you're probably very close. Yeah, Amr of Yochanan, right over here. So you're going to start from there, Amr of Yochanan. So the Gemara says, in the name of Yochanan, Negaim Ubanim, okay? Negaim is an affliction of Saras, and Banim, and Rashi explains when it says Banim here, first, Rashi says, we're referring to, at this point, a person who, Rahman Atlan, they have to bury their children, you know, that their children died during their lifetime. So those, the Rav Yochanan says, Einam Yisurim Shal Ahava. These two things are not considered to be a Yisurim, a type of affliction by Hashem, of Ahava, of love. It's not. Now, just to refresh our memory, what is Yisurim Shal Ahava? So according to Rashi, he had said in the previous Amud, Rashi had explained, when we had discussed in the previous Amud on Hamad Aleph, what are Yisurim Shal Ahava? So Rashi said that, you know, sometimes Hashem punishes a person, and this is a little bit hard to fully understand, but Hashem punishes a tzaddik because, in this world, because he wants, if that tzaddik did any averos, he wants to have the opportunity for that person to get kapara for that sin in this world, so that in the next world, they only receive reward. Okay, that's one level. That's not Yisurim Shel Ahava. Rashi says that's one level. Yisurim Shel Ahava is where a person goes ahead and he afflicts the person. He has something that is difficult, challenging, painful, suffering in this world to a person who doesn't even deserve it. They don't even have a sin that it's coming for. Rather, why does Hashem do it? Because he wants to enable this person to have more reward for having gone through that affliction and not wavered in his emunah and not wavered in his performance of mitzvot, so that they can increase their reward in the world to come more than they would have received for only the amount of mitzvot they have performed. Meaning, if we only looked at their mitzvot, they would have received X amount of reward in the world to come. But if you look at their mitzvot plus the yisurim that they suffered, that combined increased the reward they will have in the world to come. Again, this is sometimes hard to understand, right? Tzaddik, the Ralo, Rasha Vitovlo, but this is another level. I mean, there's Yisurim that come to give the person kapara as a punishment for a sin. And what we're talking about is Yisurim Shal Ahava. It's the Yisurim of drawing a person near. It's not a punishment, but the person deserves no punishment. And Hashem only loves them so much that he wants to increase the reward in the world to come more than the opportunity would have from just their mitzvot alone. That, Rashi says, is Yisurim Shal Ahava. He says, Yoter Mikdei Zichu Yosef. More, they can receive a reward for the Yisurim, more than their regular merits that they would have otherwise had. So Rav Yochanan is saying in our Gemara that Negaim and Banim, those are not Yisurim Shal Ahava. And the Gemara is going to analyze the statement. So the Gemara says, Negaim lo is Negaim, right? Are these afflictions of the skin? Are they not Yisurim Shal Ahava Vahatanya? Anyone who has these four skin afflictions, okay, what are the four skin afflictions? So when it comes to Taras, there are four different colors of Taras, which are in the category of what is considered to be the spiritual element of the skin affliction of Taras. And those are Baheres, and the told of Baheres, and the... And also Se'es, it's Se'es and Baheres, and the Se'es has a second level of down to that. So Baheres is the brightest white. Baheres is the white of snow. The second level down from Baheres is the white of the plaster of the wall in the Beis HaMikdash. It says the wall of the Heichal is a white plaster. It's very white, but a level down in terms of how the degree of whiteness. Se'es is the white color of Tzemer. This color of wool on the sheep, right? That would be the color of white. That is also a white that if it appears in the skin is considered to be Taras. And the level below that, which is also Taras, called the Tolda, the second level, is the level of the white of an egg. So those four levels would be the four, and it says here, the Arba, the four, Maris Negan, the four colors of Taras, those are the four we're referring to. So the Braisa says, Ein an ela mizbech kapara. Receiving these afflictions is considered to be a mizbech kapara. It's considered to be, mizbech kapara, like a altar of atonement. The Gemara says, well, that's exactly the point. Mizbech kapara havu. What person receives saras, it is as if he has the opportunity to get atonement for his sin, but yisurim sh'av alohavu, but they're not considered to be the yisurim of love. Why? Because we said the yisurim of ahava is not coming because of a sin, it's coming because of just the love of Hashem has for the person to increase their reward. So if the Braisa is saying that the negayim of saras is mizbeach kapara, it is a punishment because of an avera. Now, generally, we know that's because of lashon hara. So the Braisa, that's why Rav Yochanan says that those negayim, they're not yisurim shalava. If the person receives a skin affliction of taras, it is not ahava. It's not love. It's because of a punishment. It's because of a sin that he did. The Gemara gives another answer. Vibai zema. Halan v'halahu. Interesting. So Gemara says it actually depends whether we're talking about saras, the type of skin affliction, here in Bavel, right? Halan for us, v'halahu, and the other would be for those in Eretz Yisrael. Now the difference is because in Eretz Yisrael, because it's Admas Kodesh, when the person has saras, he has to leave the city. He has to leave his encampment and go outside the city. Cannot be with that affliction inside the city. Now that distancing of oneself, that the fact that he has to leave where he is and go out from the rest of the city, that can't be love. Hashem is pushing him away, from his normal spot, his normal location, away from Hashem. So in that case, they can't say that's an affliction of love. Whereas in Bavel, because in Bavel is not a land of Kodesh, and if someone has a taras in Bavel, he doesn't have to leave his home in order to be healed, in order to be part of the taras process. So therefore, it isn't considered to be a yisurim of pushing away, it's a yisurim of love, because he's still close to Hashem during the time that he has the affliction. The Gemara gives another answer. It actually perhaps depends on where the affliction is. So if it is something which is under their skin, right, it's not revealed, it's not clear, you can't be seen, so there it's less of an embarrassing situation and not one where Hashem is publicly embarrassing the person. So it's more of a love, right? He's going to put the affliction on you. He picked a spot which is under the clothes where it's not revealed. Whereas the farhesia, if it's an affliction which is open and revealed, that's where Hashem is already shows that he's pushing away a little bit because he's embarrassing you in public by requiring it to be in a location that is noticeable to others around you. So again, that's the distinction. And again, Rav Yochanan is talking about a nega, which is not of ahava. It's one which is where we're talking about, which is being more where you're being pushed away from Hashem, or it's being for a punishment, for an avera. Okay, also banim. So the other statement of Yochanan said was a punishment of children is also not a yisurim of ahava. Gemara says, hey chidami, what's the case of banim which would not be yisurim shal ahava? So he says, Gemara says, e lema, if you want to say, Dahavuluhu, that person had children. He had children. Umesu, and they died. Rahman, they died during his lifetime. Could you possibly say it's not yisurim of ahava? Bahar Amr of Yochan, Dain Garma de Sirai Bir. Rav Yochan said, the great Rav Yochan said, This is the bone of my tenth son who died. He had 10 boys and they all died. He had 10 of them and they died. He's saying he would carry around, again, they say he wouldn't carry around a big piece of bone. That would be a davar tame. But it said he would carry around either a piece of bone that was smaller than the size of a barley, or, which itself is not mekabel tame, or he would carry the tooth, and a tooth detached from the bone of a dead body is not mekabel tame. It's no longer tame. So either way, he was trying to show that he had suffered tremendously through him. And you wouldn't say that this level, right, this level of suffering of Yochanan had to suffer, Rahman Aslan is one because of the tremendous sin that he did, right, the great of Yochanan. So it must be that it was Yisurim of Ahava. So if a person, Rahman Aslan, has a child, a Nebuch, he dies during his lifetime, it's Yisurim that person suffers of love. Again, we don't understand this. It's not one which we can fully understand, but it's one that is coming from a place that Hashem wants to increase his reward, in the world to come. The Gemara says, no, we're talking about the distinction between someone who never had children versus someone who had children, but they died. Meaning someone who had children, they died, that is definitely Yisurim Shel Ahava. Rashi explains that actually the whole burial process, and Avelos, so that he says is actually, maybe that's because of, Rashi actually says here, it's because that going through the Avelos, that's Mechaper, a person's Avonos. And remember, we said, they asked them this Rashi, and Yaakov actually asked them this Rashi, wait a second, we said that Yisurim of Ahava are one where it's not because of a sin, just simply because Hashem wants to increase a person's reward in the world to come, not because of the sin they did. So why does Rashi say here that the process of the Avelos is going to be mechaper on his sins? So they explain that there's actually two stages and two levels of I guess, benefit or of what spiritual benefit that person is gaining. And that is, number one, the process of the burial, the process of Avelos, that is, if a person has any sins, Hashem's going to forgive those sins. But then, afterwards, when the Avelos is over, the person is left without a child. And that being that void, that vacuum in his life, that itself is another level of suffering, right? Not having that child in the life and that memory of the child and the challenge of missing him is also another level of Yisurim, which is the Yisurim of Ahava. Again, hard to like wrap our heads around, but that is the next level. Whereas the person who never had the child at all, that's a different level. That's not Yisurim Shel Ahava. That's what Rav Yochanan's referring to, is when a person never had, wasn't, some people are not always zocha to have children. That situation is Yisurim as well, but they're not specifically Yisurim of Ahava. So Rav Yechia Bar Abba, chalash, he became ill. Al legabe Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan came to visit Rav Yechia Bar Abba. So he said to him, accept the Yisurim of the sickness that you are suffering from? So Amalei, he said back to him, Lo hein v'lo sekharon. I wouldn't want the Yisurim, I wouldn't want to suffer the pain, and I also don't want whatever reward I'm going to be getting for this pain either. I wouldn't want either one. I don't want the opportunity for reward, I don't want to suffer. So he said to him, Yochanan said to him, Hav liyadcha, give me your hand. Yahivla, he gave it to him. Yadei v'ukme, and he was healed. So Rav Yochanan was able to heal through prayer Rav Yechia Bar Abba. Rav Yochanan chalash, and now Rav Yochanan gets sick. He became sick with an illness. So al gabe Rav Chanina comes to visit Rav Yochanan. Amalei, chaviv alech yisurim, do you accept these yisurim that you're suffering now? So Amalei, so Rav Yochanan said back to him, Lohein v'los tcharon. I don't want to have this suffering, and I wouldn't want any reward I'm getting from it. So he says to him, Hav li yadcha, give me your hand. So Yahiv Rav Yochanan gave Rav Chanina his hand, v'ukme, and he also healed. He became healed, meaning through the davening of Rav Chanina. So Amai, the Gemara says, why is it, was it necessary for, we saw already a story where Rav Yochanan had the power to heal someone through prayer. So why is it that when Rav Yochanan became sick, he needed Rabbi Chanina to give him his hand in order to feel better? So my lokim Rav Yochanan afshe, let Rav Yochanan, since he has that power, he is obviously a tzaddik of that level, where he's able to daven and have a person become healed, why didn't he daven for himself and heal himself? So the Gemara answers, Amri, they say, it's like a phrase, they say, which is explain the situation, Ein chavish matya achavis atzerim, a person who is himself jailed, he himself is not able to free himself from his own predicament. He needs someone else. If you're bound up in jail, you need someone else to come in and to free you. He himself obviously had that ability when he was free to free others, but when he himself is bound by the sickness, he needs someone else to help him. They ask on this story, we have where someone else is davening for the sick person. We say that the sick person himself he's not able to really help himself. Now, that's difficult because the story in the Chumash, right, where in Parshas Vayera, where Hagar and Ishmael, baby Ishmael, are kicked out, or little boy Ishmael, are kicked out of Avram's home, and they're traveling, wandering around the desert, and they're dying of thirst, and Hagar is davening, and the baby is crying. And it says, Hashem, Vayishma Hashem es kol hanar. Hashem hears the cry of the boy, meaning she's calling out to Hashem, and he's crying. So who is Hashem listening to? Hagar, he listens to the baby. So Rashi on the Torah comments that you see that the greatest level is the tefillah that Echola would daven for himself, meaning that Hashem listened which tefillah, for the baby, being for the baby who's going to be dying, or from the mother who's crying for the baby. The answer is for the baby himself. Hashem is listening more because the power of tefillah of the sick person for himself is even greater than those who are davening for the sick person. So how does that work? They ask from on that Rashi and Chumash from our Gemara, because our Gemara says that the person who davens, person who's sick himself, isn't able to heal himself because he's bound up in jail. He needs someone else to come and to help him out. So it sounds like the other person's tefillah, Rabbi Chanina's tefillah, was stronger than the tefillah of Yochanan. So how do you put the two together? So the answer that they give is that there are times, if a chola can daven for himself, if he's able to fully have the right kavana, which is not always possible when someone's sick, then their tefillah for themselves is the strongest tefillah possible. However, it's true, and we know, that when people are sick and suffering from illness, that they're not always able to daven with the same kavana or a tremendous kavana and focus that they normally would want. And therefore, what they need is they explain it one of two ways. Either they therefore need to encourage others to daven for them. And in that situation, the tefillah of others will be greater than the chol himself. Chol himself would be the greatest, but when they're physically unable to, mentally unable to, because of their illness, it's better that others should be encouraged to daven on their behalf. And you should let other people know, please daven on my behalf. But, or they say, the other way to say it, is that a chola needs someone else. I mean, when he took his hands, when he had the person come and visit and said, give me your hands, what he was doing, what Bichanina was doing for Rav Yochanan, was to give him a chizuk, give him strength. I mean, one of the things that we're supposed to do when we visit sick people is to by visiting them, raise their spirits and to enable them to have a little bit of strength and give them encouragement, and that through that visit they'll be able to hopefully arouse within the chola an opportunity to focus on their tefillah even greater than they would have been able to had you not come to visit them, to give them strength, to give them encouragement. And then the tefillah of Rav Yochanan was able to heal himself, meaning until Rav Chanina took his hand and gave him strength and gave him chizuk, Rav Yochanan's tefillah was not effective. But once he was able to get chizuk from the people who visited him, so then his tefillah was effective. That's how they explain this Gemara in relationship to the story of how Hashem listens to the tefillah of Yishmael more than the sick person himself, more than the tefillah of others davening for the chola. Okay. So the Gemara continues. It says Rabbi Eliezer Chalash. So Rabbi Eliezer also got sick. Al Gabir of Yochan. Rabbi Yochan came to him. Chaz Dahave Kagane Bebesafel. He saw that Rabbi Eliezer was in a dark house. It was very dark in the room. They wanted to brighten it up. So what he did was Galye Le Derae Vinafel Nahora. He revealed his arm. He actually, like, unbuttoned the shirt and revealed his arm. And from his arm, it lit up the room. Lit up the room. Now, there's different ways of explaining what this is all about. Definitely, it relates to the fact that the Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about the beauty of Rav Yochanan. He was an exceptionally beautiful individual. So some say his skin was exceptionally, light and iridescent. And there was some lamp in the room, but when he put his arm next to the lamp, the radiance off of his arm was able to cause a greater light shining in the room. Others say that has to do with the tremendous Torah that Rabbi Yochanan had. We know that from recent parshios, right? So that Karan or Pane Moshe, right? So the light, Moshe's face was actually radiated light from the Torah that was, within him or on him. And similarly, Rav Yochanan had this light that emanated from him as well because of the Shemesh Torah. Now, we see many times among the Amoraim and among the Tanayim, miracles were like almost commonplace compared to the miracles we talk about in the Chumash. This is one example of those on that list of things where you see split the waters, split again, different examples where they were in one other Moraim was in the oven, he was running away from someone, he ran to the oven, he and his wife, so he got singed, but his wife, nothing happened to him. So you see kind of miracles where like by Avram, it's like a huge nace. Kriyas Yamsu, the huge nace, the nace of, you know, Karan or Pnei Moshe, by the Amorayim, right, it was a more commonplace type of these nisim were much commonplace because, again, the Torah that they had, once it was given over to Klal Yisrael, you know, we had the ability to essentially, let's say, alter nature in a way and create nisim much, much greater than before they were Mekabel Torah. Okay, that's part of a larger discussion. But anyhow, we see from here that he lit the room through revealing his arm. So the Gemara continues and says, Chazye Rav Yochanan saw the Rav Elazar Dehavi Kabachi Rav Elazar. He saw the Rav Elazar was crying. So Rav Elazar, my Kabachis, why are you crying? So Imishum Torah Delo Efshas. If you're crying, Rav Yochanan says, he's trying to, like, you know, cheer him up a little bit. He says, if you're crying because you feel like you haven't had the ability to learn all the Torah that you wanted. So he says, don't worry. Shaninu, we've learned, Echad Hamarba, the Echad Hamamit, Bavashi Chav Nibel Shemayim. Whether a person has done a lot or a little, as long as he has the right intention, Hashem considers it the same. Where does this come from? So this comes from the Korbanos. We say, Rashi quotes that Le'in and Korbanos, Shinui, it's referring to Korbanos. It says by the Korban, Ola Sehema, if a person brings an Ola of a right, a large animal, right, a cow, for example. So it's a reach nichoach. Hashem considers it to be a beautiful fragrance from that korban. But it also says the mincha. If you have a mincha, which is also can be an ola, mincha's ola, also it says reach nichoach. That also is a beautiful smell in front of Hashem. Lamdecha, to teach you, she'echad hamarbe, echamami, whether you are rich and you can afford the big korban, or whether you are poor, you can only afford the meager korban of a korban mincha, just flour, oil, right? That's it. Salt. That korban is as worthy in Hashem's eyes, as great in Hashem's eyes, as the person who was able to give the more expensive korban. As long as a person does what is his intention is l'shem shemayim, they're doing everything they can l'shem shemayim, and they are not trying to be cheap, and they're not trying to cut out, and they weren't trying to do other things than afterwards say, well, you know, I didn't get to learn, but I didn't really try that hard. If a person did what they could and they learned to their abilities and to their opportunity that Hashem gave them individually, it is as great as the Hashem considers it, as equal on par to the person who had more opportunity or a person who had more ability, whether it be intellect or whether it be in time or in just general opportunity or background or learning, whatever it was, that Hashem considers it the same as long as the person's intention is l'shem shemayim. So he says to Rabbi Elazar, don't be worried about the fact that you feel like maybe you didn't learn enough, because as long as you've done everything l'shem shemayim, whatever you were able to accomplish is what Hashem wanted and is going to find value in as great as anyone else. V'im yishum zonei, if you're crying because poor, you don't have food, you don't have really enough food to eat. So he says, lo klazim zoch l'shem shochanos. It's very uncommon to find someone who spent their life in learning and is great in Torah and also has tremendous wealth. Generally speaking, we know that the relationship is the opposite. Shemes tamim chamim, we see how meager they are, how poor they are, how small their their possessions are and their homes are, how very pedestrian what they have is. And it's because it's not too easy to focus all of your efforts in learning and also be able to become rich. There are some examples, Rav Yehuda Nasi, right, is one example of someone who was able to become tremendously wealthy as well as also have achieved tremendous heights in learning, but that's not so common. So don't feel bad, Rabbi Elazar says to him, that you might not have a lot of money. That's just the consequence of becoming great in learning. It's not so easy to have the two come together. So he says furthermore, V'imishum b'nei, and if it's because perhaps you have children who you feel who died in your lifetime and you buried your children, right, so that's also something that's very difficult. So he says, Rav Yochanan, we already just had this. Rav Yochanan says, Dein gar medesirei b'nibir. Look, this eye can show you my 10th son, who I buried in my lifetime, Rachman Aslan, right? My 10th son. So you should know. Why is he trying to tell him, well, you know, you had a son died, I have 10 sons who died. He's not trying to show him up. He's trying to say that you had a son who died, and you're thinking probably it's because I must have sinned, I must have done something horrible. And he's trying to tell him, no, that's not the case. A person, Rahman's son, has a child who died. It was Yisurim Shal Ahava. It's not that the father did some kind of sin, did something wrong. There's no way to explain. I mean, again, it's not an explanation, but he's trying to say that's coming from a place within HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Ahava, Yisurim of Ahava. And he's, because there's no way, he says, I had 10 sons who died, that that's coming from some kind of punishment of sin that I did. He says, rather, you should also know again for yourself as well. You had a son who died, Rabbi Eliezer. Don't think that you're crying because you feel like Nebuch, there was, must be some kind of sin that you did. It's Yisurim Shel Ahava. So he sees that he's crying. So he's trying to figure out why he's crying. So he says to him, Amrle, Lahaishufra Debali de Afra Kabachina. Actually, the reason why I'm crying, Rav Yochanan, is not because of any of these other reasons. I'm crying looking at your beauty, right? He had like opened up his arm and he's the radiant light of his arm showing the room and how beautiful Rav Yochanan was. So he says, I'm crying because his beauty is one day gonna be buried in the earth. So he's buried in the dust and the ashes. Again, a little hard to understand what exactly that refers to. So Amrle al Dov Vade Kabachis. So Rav Yochanan says back to him, yeah, that's actually worth crying about. Umbachu Tarvayu, and they both cried together over his beauty that would one day be lost. So Adahachi Vahachi. So from while this is happening, so Amrle, so Rav Yochanan said, like while they're having this discussion, they're crying. So Rav Yochanan says to Rav Eliezer, remember who was sick. He said, Amrle, Chaviv Alach Yisurim, do you appreciate the Yisurim that you're suffering from? So Amrle, again, Lohein Velos Karan. I don't want the suffering. I don't want any reward I'm getting from it. I'd rather have neither one. So Amrle, Sir Rav Yochanan says to him, Havli Yadcha, give me your hand, Yahiv Le, Yadei. He gave him his hand, Bukmei, and he was able to heal Rabbi Eliezer. Rav Huna, so let's go by to Rav Huna, Takifu Le Arba Mea Dinrei Dechamra. So Rav Huna, this is the following story. So the story, a little bit of a lengthy back and forth story, but the story starts off that Rav Huna had at that moment 400 barrels of wine, which all spoiled on him and became vinegar, right? The wine spoiled into vinegar. So tremendous financial loss. So Al-Lagabi Rav Yehuda Ahuad Rav Salah Chassid. But some say Rav Yehuda, the brother of Rav Salah, the Chassid, Virabanan and the rabbis and the Bnei Shiva came to visit him. The Amrila, and some say it was Rav Adabar Ahava Rabban. Some say it was Rav Adabar Ahava came to visit him with the Rabbanan. And they said to Rav Papa, Amrule, they said to him, they said to Rav Huna, excuse me, Le'ayin Mar Bimile. You know, the fact that you suffered this tremendous loss, maybe you should use it as an opportunity to investigate, right? Look and see if there's something that you're not doing 100%, which could explain why Hashem punished you in this way. So Rav Huna didn't take that very kindly. Amar Lahu, he said to him, Umi chashidna beinaichu? Are you looking at me like in a way, are you assuming that I did sins? That you're telling me look into my actions and find the sin that I did? Like, do I look like a criminal to you? Like that you're making such assumptions about me? So Amru Le, they said to him, Mihasha Kash Baruch Hu, the Avidina Belodina. Are you choshed that Hakash Baruch Hu went ahead and judged you to have a financial loss like this without some reason behind it? Meaning, did God punish you then for no reason? There must have been a reason. So don't say to us that we're looking at you askance that you did something inappropriate. It must be that it was something because otherwise Hashem wouldn't punish you that way. So Amar Lahu, so he said to them, now, we had said before that sometimes Hashem punishes a great tzaddik just because of Yisurim Shel Ahava, no sin. So the only reason why they did assume there was a sin there is because they have to, as we're going to see in the story, they happen to know that there was something there Rav Huna did not do 100% correct. They knew about it. They were there to try and help Rav Huna come to that understanding, come to that realization. I mean, they were coming to, sometimes it's good, and you're going to see the way they do it. Sometimes you see a friend who's not doing something 100%, who's doing an avera, if you come to him straight, you're doing this thing wrong, it doesn't always go over very well. You see the way in which they go about it. Maybe you should think about, you know, your actions, maybe, and then you're going to see how they keep continue to say it. So Amar Lahu, so he says, Ika man dishmiya alai milsalema. So Rav Huna says to him, well, if someone knows I'm not doing something right, let them say it. So Amru Le, they say to him, Hachi shmi'alan. This is what we, as a group, have heard. They don't say individual, like one guy. There's not like one guy speaks up. But the group says, well, this is what we've heard about you. Deloyav mar shabisha le'arise. You're not giving your sharecropper, the branches that you're supposed to give him. Meaning that the sharecropper is someone who he does the work on your land, and you're eventually going to split the produce. In this case, it's wine, it's grape, the vines, And you're going to split the wine. Once there's wine, he's going to take a certain cut, and you're going to take the other cut, 50-50, 30-70, whatever the number is going to be. But in addition, he also has the right to take some of the actual branches of the vine itself at the end of the process when they harvest everything. That's part of the deal, should be. But he didn't give it to him. So you mean you're holding back then that you owe your sharecropper. So Amr Lahu, Rav Huna said back to him, you want to know why I did that? Mika Shavik Li Midi Minei? He didn't leave anything for me. Hagganiv Le Kule. There was a previous cycle like of harvesting the vines where my sharecropper took everything. He was supposed to share. Remember, the wine was to be split, and we're also supposed to share and split the actual branches of the vine. And last cycle, he didn't give me anything. He took everything. He's a ganav. So I simply, this time around, held back from him to make us even. I wasn't trying to do anything that wasn't deserving of me. He last time didn't give me my share, so this time I'm giving him his share, and now we're even. So Amru Le, Hainu de Amri Inche, Bater Ganava, Ganu, Vita'in Ta'in. Sometimes the person sees someone and experiences someone who steals something from him, right? You kind of learn the lesson of the Ganav and can sometimes be influenced by it. And here, what should Huna have done? Huna should have taken him to court. You didn't pay me back, so I'm going to now take this. Like, it's almost like if a person goes ahead and he saw someone steal his phone. So yeah, you grab your phone back. But you can't get back at the guy by taking his car keys from him. That's not an appropriate, like, you can't do that. They explain, even though we say, generally speaking, a person's allowed to go ahead and take monetary matters into his own hands when he's owed money legitimately, but that is true, they say, only with the thing itself, number one possibility, meaning if a person stole from you an object, an item, your watch, you can take your watch back, but you can't take his watch back as a retribution for him taking your watch. That you can't do. Or what you have to do is you can take the watch back, or you can take something back from him, take something of value back from him on your way to Beis Din. Because then, at least almost, you're holding on to something, and Beis Din rules in your favor, so that you have the monetary value of what you are owed. Meaning, if you're owed $100, you take something of value of $100 on your way to Beis Din. Beis Din, you say, here's the judge, here's the case. If they pass it in your favor, so you are now holding on to that which you rightfully deserve, because you are owed that money, and here's the tangible value of what you're owed. Okay, so he didn't do that. He was simply taking on his own something else that the sharecropper now owed him. He kind of like to make it even, which isn't so appropriate. So Amr Lahu, to exact him, Kabilna Alai, he says, Yehavnalei. So Rav Huna says, I now accept upon myself that I'm going to give him the branches that he owed. You're right. I acknowledge what I did wrong. Right, so they achieved what they wanted to achieve. So that was the sin for which he lost the tremendous, monetary loss of the all the wine turning into vinegar. So the Gemara says, "Ika de Amri." Some say, "Hader chala b'havichamra." There was a nes that occurred. There's some kind of miracle that the spoiled wine turned back from vinegar back into wine after his acceptance of his of what he did wrong and saying he's going to make it right. Some say actually the value of vinegar increased. There's some run on vinegar. The value went up so high that now it was at the level where wine was being sold, so that he really didn't lose money because now he's able to sell the vinegar at wine prices, and so he didn't lose any money. Okay, let's finish up. So Tanya, Abba Binyamin Omer. We're at the two dots, the last medium-sized line. Tanya, Abba Binyamin Omer, Al Shnei Devarim Hayisi Mitzar Kol Yamai, my whole life I was like very careful to make sure of the following two things. Al Tzilasi Shtei Lefnei Mitasi. Number one, that my davening should be in front of my bed. We'll have to explain what that means. And secondly, the Al Mitasi Shtei Netuna Ben Safon L'Dharma, that my bed would face north-south. Now, this is a little bit of a Kabbalistic idea, but the north-south versus with bed being in some other direction, more towards the east-west line, is that the Shechina Shora, the Shechina sort of exists on a plane of east to west, is what the Gemara says elsewhere. And Kabbalistically, therefore, a person shouldn't like align himself in his bed. And most of the person says it refers to with one's wife, a husband with wife together, in a north-south direction, in a east-west direction, like the Shechina, it's a little bit not right, on a tablet, again, a spiritual higher level. So he was turned his bed, like, perpendicular to that plane, only in the north-south direction. He's very careful to make sure that with his wife, he's only sort of oriented in his bed north and south. This is quoted in the Halacha L'Maaseh, quoted in the Poskim. The Taz says that this is really only, like, for a a person who's Yari Shemayim, a higher level individual, to make sure that his bed is oriented this way. But it is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, the halacha, that when a person is specifically in bed together, husband and wife. Okay, so I'll, and the second thing he would do is, I'll see, this is a little bit more understandable, I'll see, lasi shtei lifnei mitasi. Also, that his, he says, my davening was always in front of my bed. What does that mean? My lifnei mitasi. So Elam, if you want to say lifnei mitasi mamish, if you want to say that means that he would put his bed in front of him when he davened. Like he would daven in a way that his bed was like positioned between him and whatever else that was in the room. So that can't be. That would make no sense. Because Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, V'yisemar Yishu ben Levi, minayin l'mispalo shlo yehei, davar chosei zbeno l'kir. If a person is davening, he shouldn't have anything separate between him and the wall. Shenemar, v'yaseit chizkiyahu panav el hakir v'yispalo. We see from Chizkiyahu Melech that he, when he went to daven, he would turn his face towards the wall and he would daven. Now, what is this idea of not having anything separate between yourself and the wall? Right? You should stand right up to the wall or have nothing between you and the wall. It's because there will be nothing distracting. If what's in front of you is simply the plain wall, then you will have no distraction. You'll be able to have extra kavana in your tefillah. Now, it's quoted the halacha also in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, so we have, I think we have 2 minutes to cover this. The halacha says as well, it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch in Simin Sadi. Sif Chaf Alef and Chaf Beis. It says, Tzarech Shelo Yehei Davar Choseit Beino Lebein Akir. A person is davening, should have nothing between you and the wall. Now, that means, okay, there's a few exceptions to this. Davar Kavua, if something is fixed, like the Aron Kodesh, right, is fixed into the wall. So if you're staying in front of the Aron Kodesh, that's not considered to be a separation between the Aron Kodesh and the wall. Or the Teva, if the place where the Chazan davens is, it's fixed in the Shul. So again, it's not something which is considered to be a break in your concentration between you and the wall. That doesn't count. Furthermore, it says, V'chein ba'ale chayim einem chotutim. An animal, right, would not be considered to be a life, anything that's alive, would not be considered to be a separation between the wall. And afilu adam, if a person, so if you have three people standing in front of you, that's also, he says, not considered to be a chatitza. The Rama says, that's the Shulchan Aruch. Rama says that, no, he thinks that animals would be a chatitza, but a person is not a chatitza. And that's where he says is the proper approach, that a person in front of you, in front of the wall, is in a separation, but the ideal is that person should be right in front. Now, the Shulchan Aruch quotes another opinion in the next sif, Chafez, which says, Yesh mishomer, she yesh lizar mizpal achore shum adam, v'tov l'chosh l'dvarav. It's best if a person tries not to daven behind anyone else. I mean, we just said that your person should have nothing separating between him and the wall. You shouldn't have, like, imagine some extraneous item that's there in front of your place, like a bed, a refrigerator, something that's there that might distract from your tefillah. But he says, in even higher levels, some say, is that you should have literally, you shouldn't even daven behind the person, even though it's not considered to be a chatzitza. You should be the front of the shul. Now, the Mishnah Berurah says that it's obviously impossible to have every single person daven in front of a shul. Otherwise, the shul will be built very long and very narrow with one big long wall, and everyone should line up along the wall. So rather, it says that for certain individuals who have really exceptional kavanda and certain individuals who try always to do things on a higher spiritual level, that would apply to them, that they should try and find a place in the shul which is closest to the Mizrach, right? They should stand closest to the wall in the front of the shul, in order to have a higher level of kavanah where no one is, you're not looking behind someone who might chuckle, in some way distracting them. Again, we're talking about a very minor level of distraction, but for certain individuals who really have a very, very high level of chassidus, midas chassidus, then that individual would be someone who should try and find a spot where they are what's in front of them is the wall itself. However, the technical halacha for all of us is that you shouldn't be standing in front of something extraneous, something that is at least, it says 10 tefachim high, a certain height, not something tiny, a little chair wouldn't count, but like his bed, his refrigerator, something substantial, which would distract from his kavanah. So that can't be what he refers to, because he wouldn't put his bed in front of him. So rather, the Gemara says, what would he do? It says he would, Ela ema samuch lemitasi. The al mitashi shtei in the tune of, oh, so he says that he would daven close to the time when he woke up from his bed. That's what he means. Samach l'mitasi, that he would daven as soon as he would wake up. Meaning, Rashi explains, he wouldn't be involved in any type of work or other things. He wouldn't like start checking his email, answering emails. He wouldn't start doing things like that before he davened. As soon as he would wake up, the next thing he would do is, the next activity he would really do would be to daven first. Okay. Rashi actually is also learning, but Tosfos and others say that it doesn't apply to learning. If a person has the opportunity to learn, especially if it's a shir, he would not go ahead and he would not, you know, not. It's totally appropriate to be, if there's a daf yomi or some other shir that person has the opportunity to learn from, he can do that before davening. We're talking about when a person is learning on their own. So if you have the opportunity, it's time to daven versus learning on your own, daven and then learn your own afterwards. But if there's a shir or some formal learning opportunity or teaching opportunity before davening that you are allowed to do. So the Gemara says, furthermore, he would have his bed in the Bain Safin Ladarim, Bahavian Lay Banim Zacharim. The person who does such a thing, to have his bed oriented north south, will merit to have male children. Shnemar Utsfuncha Tamale Bitnam Yisivu Banim. If a person, Sifuncha refers to something which is hidden, but also the same Shoresh means north. So if a person has his bed in the north south direction, he will have Yisivu Banim, he'll have lots of sons. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar, a person also, his wife, will not have stillbirths. That a person, it says, it will be full with, the stomach will be full with the child. And it says also, yamalu yameledes means that the birth had the full 9 months of development. That she had the children in full term. So that person will not have a stillbirth, and the chasr rahman on the child dying earlier in the pregnancy will be able to carry the pregnancy to full term. Okay, let's stop over here because Marv is in 1 minute.
Sure.
Okay, sure.